is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion on for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or different religions or faiths. My interviews are done in the studio of Planet FM or via Zoom. Today I'm going to talk with Debbie Miller. She is the educator at Beth Shalom, the progressive Jewish synagogue in Auckland. Our topic for this interview is food. Debbie, would you like to share some traditions around food in Judaism?
Hi, Beate. Thank you for inviting me to talk with you today. I wanted to say something before I get into specific traditions, just talk about general attitudes within Judaism. You asked me a question earlier when we started this whole conversation out, and you said, so can you tell me some holidays where food is important in Judaism? And I was like, every holiday food is important in Judaism. In fact, the holidays where it's not important, we're fasting. So it makes it central as well, because all you're thinking about food, right? So you have to ask yourself, why is that? You know, why is food so central? Why is, well, you could say it's central because we as humans have this need to eat. But more than that, it's the idea, and specifically in Judaism, that food should be taken up from the animalistic level. So what differentiates us from animals? What differentiates us from animals is how we relate to the world. Can we raise something up to a holy level, or are we just feeding our faces? And Judaism says, no, the process of eating, the process of feeding, the process of sustenance must be imbued with holiness. And so therefore, the way we relate to an animal that is being killed in order for us to eat it, how it has to be killed, the consciousness that we go about when we kill the animal, that we're taking a life in order for us to eat, that the foods that we eat are in certain classifications of being, you know, okay to eat foods and not okay to eat foods. And so this concept that we can, it's not just survival, it's also a consciousness that it has a product in our frontal cortex versus just the, you know, survival component of our body. And so Judaism is very conscious that you have to bless the food. You have to be grateful for the food. You have to be conscious of what's being foregone and avoided. But then when you get to celebrations, food needs to be also central, because how do you make something special? How do you make something holy? How do you make something a memory, something that you can come back to, and it's like putting on a coat that you, an old coat that you feel really comfortable in. Ah, I remember this holiday from my childhood. We did this. We ate that. And so that's part of what tradition's about. Tradition's about this idea that you want to make people feel like they're putting on something that feels good and comfortable, and they know it somewhere behind that conscious level. And so food does that.
So when you say that, Debbie, what do you do when you're living in a country where you can't get that food?
Well, first of all, a lot of people go without what you would consider, you know, their basic desire. Like, I choose not to eat any pig, or I choose not to eat meat because kosher meat in New Zealand is exorbitantly expensive. So I, you know, you just choose to do, in contrary to modern Western belief, you can control yourself. You can make choices, and choices are a good thing. You know, that's actually, I'm doing a drush this week, which is interpretation of the Torah portion for the week, which is the biblical portion for the week. And we're looking at, Moses says the Ten Commandments for the second time in the Torah. And one of the things I talked about is that making choices, whether it be food or anything else, making choices is a chance to exercise your desire to do good or to do not do good or bad. And that's a healthy process. That is a healthy process to be in control and choose. And choosing makes us conscious, and choosing makes us aware of what we're doing with our lives versus just being unconscious and stuffing our face with whatever's sold to us over the internet or over advertising or wherever else you want in bulletin boards. Making choices is a healthy thing to do. It makes us aware of whether we're doing good or bad. And, you know, sometimes people say, oh, there are all these laws. You know, there are laws. That's not a bad thing. I mean, a lot of times we observe laws and we're not aware that we're observing them. We have prejudices and we're not aware we have those prejudices. So choosing to not eat, you know, the plethora of foods that are available in society is not because they aren't kosher or they aren't fit for us to eat. It's not a bad thing. You know, and it even gets into the environmental issue. In Judaism, there's this concept of kashrut, where you're only allowed to eat certain foods.
Can you say that again?
It literally means to be kosher. Kosher means fit to eat. Is it fit to eat beef cattle when they are contributing to climate change and the world's falling apart? I don't think so. You know, so it's not kosher according to biblical standards, but is it fit for us to eat anymore? Maybe not. These are choices. If we're deciding if something's fit to eat anymore.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about the term kosher?
Okay. So kosher, as I said, literally means fit to eat. But where did it come from? In the Bible, it says you should not cook a kid, which means a baby goat, in its mother's milk. So you have to go back to the idea of us wandering in the desert, okay? We probably didn't eat very much meat, and we were shepherds, and we probably kept the animals for, you know, like milking or whatever. How did you get meat? You got meat because the goat gave birth to two goats. So you only needed one, and the other one you killed, and where you didn't have liquid because you were in a desert. So what did you cook it in? You cooked in this. Philosophically, cooking a baby goat in its mother's milk was abhorrent to our sensibilities, you know. So that's where the whole idea that you shouldn't mix milk and meat came in. And from that, we extrapolate a lot of other things. But it's this consciousness that milk symbolizes that which gives sustenance to the animal that we ate, and that somewhere philosophically that's problematic. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for animals that we're allowed to eat, and fish we're allowed to eat. If you look at the animals and fish we're allowed to eat, you find that they are generally speaking not carnivores. They are, and they're definitely not scavengers. So you're guaranteed a certain level of health, because you're not eating the poisons second and third level down. And if you look at pigs, for example, this is totally disgusting, but they used to have like toilets where they used to have pigs eating from the toilet. That's how they got rid of the stuff. And you said it was a seriously unhealthy animal that ate garbage. We only eat animals that chew their cud, which eat grass and they have to re-eat it, and they're not eating other animals. And the chances of disease and transfer of disease is much less. But that's not the quotient for kashrut. The quotient for kashrut is it's fit to eat. which means fit for our bodies, fit for our souls. Souls is the consciousness about how you're going to kill it, and our bodies is the health of the components that's there. I would like to add a new component, which is fit for our environment, because we are in a very dangerous situation right now, which we have to have that consciousness added to the level of Kashrut, because it will determine whether we can live on in this world.
Debbie, now we've talked a lot about what you can't eat and what you can eat. Can you tell us a little bit about Jewish traditions, Jewish rituals, where you eat certain food?
Okay, so like I said, holidays, so those are all about the whole main body, but holidays are this idea that you're trying to make people experience the holiday. If you want somebody to have a memory of an experience, they say, and you talk to young children, they say that if you ask them what they remember, a lot of times they'll talk about smells. That's your earliest memory. Taste is probably second. We are now, because we are, I guess, what would you call it? More developed and more, we're visually trained. But our earliest memories of how to determine if something was safe to eat or not safe to eat was through our smell and through our taste. And if it tasted not good, or if it smelled not good, you spit it out. So a lot of the pleasantness, the pleasure that comes out of eating is something that's supposed to go with a holiday. We always say Oneg Shabbat, the pleasure of Shabbat. And what is the pleasure of Shabbat? The pleasure of Shabbat is to have a special meal. You should have special braided bread, and you should have special wine. And you don't have a lot of this stuff, but it's pleasant. It's pleasurable. It's different than all the other days of the week. And the same, and Shabbat is Sabbath, which is on Friday and Saturday from sunset to sunset. So when you talk about these things and you want to make a tradition experiential or memorable, you add components to it versus just saying, celebrate this holiday. You say, let's have special bread. Our most important holiday is the Sabbath. It happens every 7 days, and we have a special challah, and then we have a special wine, and then we have a special meal. And that happens 3 times. And generally speaking, back in the days where we were less well-to-do than we are in modern society, having meal 3 times in 24 hours was probably an anomaly. We didn't have that. We probably had one meal once a day, which is probably a lot healthy for us, frankly speaking, but we won't go into that. But then the second thing is the holidays that we do have. So with most holidays, like the beginning of the new year, which is coming up in September, we celebrate Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which are our holidays, not a new year like you have, but a new year like we have, which is an accounting for how we want to live our lives, how we lived it this past year, how we want to live it next year, not just our personal life, but our communal life. So in other words, I'm not just responsible for how Debbie Miller did not rape, kill, or pillage. I'm responsible for the fact that my society still has those things going on in them, and I need to be accountable for that, as well as for my own personal deeds. And so we spend all day in the synagogue praying, but we also have symbolic foods that symbolize having what we want in the next year. So we take an apple, which is symbolic of, say, the world or the totality, and we cut it up, and it's sweet and it's pleasant, and we dip it in honey so that we have a sweet year, okay? And then we get to the next holiday, which is Yom Kippur, when we're like praying, please inscribe us for another year of life, okay? There's a chance we could not live for another year, so we fast all day. Oh, great. This is fantastic. But food is central to that, too. And in my synagogue, we do something really nice. Everybody's supposed to take all the food that they would have eaten that day and put it in bags, and then we donate it to people that don't have food.
Yeah.
But the idea being that you really need to understand that the experience of food or no food or special foods is memorable and is a blessing, and making that unique food attached to that. And sometimes we use food to tell a story. So the Exodus from Egypt, when the Jews were freed from slavery, and we didn't have enough time. Pharaoh finally, after the 10th plague, says, okay, you can go. Moses is like, get out of here now. You can't make your sourdough bread. It's going to take too long. You've got 20 minutes. Put it all in your bag and let's go. And so everybody left, and their bread got without rising, made without. And so they are these dry crackers. And we eat that for 7 days to remind us of the story of the Exodus. But also we have this big plate on the first night. It's called the Seder plate, and it's an ordered meal. And we go through the entire meal telling the same story and the same traditions and the same fables and processes and blessings for about 2.5-3 hours. Some people do marathon stuff. But anyway, it takes a while to get through a Seder night, and you eat all these special foods, and you talk, and you argue, and you retell the story, and you re-sing the special songs, and it's a whole meal centered around food, and the food tells the story.
So can you give us an example for...
There's a special food we make, which is called choroset. And choroset is made, it depends what country you came from, but my family came from Eastern Europe, so they make it out of apples and walnuts, wine and cinnamon. And they grind it all up, and it comes out brown. And it looks like bricks that the slaves made in Egypt. So you eat that on your matzah, and you remember what slavery was and how bitter it was, how it was in Egypt. And then my husband is from India, and his family used the foods that were available to him. So they use dates and figs and raisins and wine and nuts. And they grind it all up. And it looks similar and same brown sort of paste, same concept, but different countries, different foods, but the same idea. And to make this sort of sweet paste with available items that are there. There's also used bitter herbs, so to remind us the bitter herbs, and dipping the celery into salt water to remind us the tears, and you know, and a shank bone, which is a remind us of the sacrifice, where we put blood on our doorposts so that when they were killing the first child in every family, the
angel would pass over.
Yeah, the bad one.
Yeah.
The angel of death. The angel of death would, I don't know, I was trying to think of the words in English. The angel of death
would pass over.
Would pass over, literally pass over and not go to those houses and kill the firstborn. So that's where Passover gets its name. So that's an example of foods. But actually, we have Tu B'Shvat, which is the holiday, the new year of the trees, and that we celebrate all the different nuts and fruits and that come from the trees. And then we have the holiday after that, which is Purim, which is the story of the almost killing of the Jewish people in Persia. And we have little triangular cookies called Hamantaschen or Ozne Haman. Ozne Haman is in Hebrew and Hamantaschen is in Yiddish. And they're filled with like a little fruit thing and they're a sweet cookie. But we also have this tradition that we should give to everybody. So everybody takes and makes little parcels and packages and gives them to their friends when they go to visit them. Or we give them, my Sunday school makes packages up and we give them out all to the elderly in our community. So, and then we get to Passover, which I told you about. After Passover, we have Yom Ha'atzmaut, which is Israel independence, and it's traditional to go out and have a big barbecue in the park to celebrate. And then we get to Tisha B'Av, which is a fast holiday again. So remember the destruction of the temple. And then I just talked about Rosh Hashanah. After that is Sukkot, which is when we went out and harvested in the fields. So we have specific things we take, but it all has food central to the thing. Hanukkah, obviously, we have special cookies that people make, decorative little cookies, and we have little chocolate candies we give out. It's more about lighting the candles and the oil, though, in Hanukkah, but we're influenced by the celebration of Christmas at that time of year, so we've taken on some of those needs to give presents, but that wasn't initially the intention at all, to be quite honest. But usually,
if you have a nice meal, it's also a nice present.
Yeah, we make donuts. You're supposed to do things with oil, so we make donuts, filled donuts, and out of oil every single night of Hanukkah. My children, we make donuts. It's like after 8 days of donuts, you could like. You can also make potato pancakes, which is what the Eastern Europeans did because they didn't have so much flour. But so it's just different ways of just including lots of fried oily food traditionally during Hanukkah that they do. But it's much more about the food and the lighting of the candles and the oil and the story than it is about giving presents. That's just a copying of Christmas, which I don't think Christmas was originally about either, frankly speaking.
Well, when you say about the different foods and the traditions, I'm just wondering, what do you do when somebody can't eat certain food? Or is there some kind of flexibility? Or what do you do in
what do you mean? Times? Like, say somebody's allergic to it?
Yep.
So the most important thing in Judaism is called pikuach nefesh, which is saving a life. So in the interest of saving somebody's life, you can transgress on any law in Judaism. Okay, so yep. Obviously you would find an alternative if it's unsafe for the person. You would never, ever, ever do something that would endanger somebody's health. As a matter of fact, there's a famous story by Rabbi Israel Salanter. He was a ethical rabbi who lived in the 1700s, 1800s, I don't remember which. Anyway, and there was a plague going around, and Yom Kippur was there, and he knew that the weak and in the infirm, if they went without eating, would possibly be really dangerous and weaken them to the point where it would endanger their health. So he got up on the bima, the rabbi of this famous synagogue, and he took a piece of honey cake and he ate and he drank. And he said, this year it is so dangerous health-wise for people to be subjected to not having their full strength that I am eating this in a pikuach nefesh to save my physical being. And I don't want any of you who, you know, instead of trying to figure out who should be able and who shouldn't, he just said, everybody have something to eat because it's just too dangerous in this current situation. So
I think this is also common in the Christian and the Muslim traditions that when you have fasting, certain people are exempt.
Yeah.
Just to save lives. Yeah.
And the same thing, if you have medication you have to take and it has to be taken with something, then you take it with something. That's just the way it is. You do to the best of your healthy ability. It's because you don't like fasting and it gives you a big caffeine headache, well, that's too bad. But if it's because you have to take medication or you're too weak, then you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think that's because you said earlier also with the goats that when you think of the two goats, it's about saving a life. You know, it's all about the food being there for nutrition to continue your life. and not to restrict it in a way that it's dangerous.
Yeah, but it's not an easy way out. So, for example, I had a girlfriend who gave birth. She's very religious, you know, very observant. And she gave birth, and it was in Israel, and it's very hot in August, September in Israel. It's like, it was like 35 degrees. And it was really hot, and she just gave birth, and she's breastfeeding full time. And I said to her, you know, are you sure you want to fast? You know, at least drink water. And she said, no, I'm going to drink and lie in bed and not move for the 24 hours. And so basically what she did was she drank a ton before, she breastfed the whole time, and she did, and she just didn't get out of bed. She just, you know, tried to do the absolute minimum work, but it was really important for her to observe it. So not to try to take the evil way out. If she felt like she was vomiting and she was getting to a point, but she didn't get to that because she took a different way around doing it. But, you know, it's not an easy way out. It's just, you know, so there, I lived in the south of Israel where it was very hot. It was hard to fast during Yom Kippur. You know, you could get dehydrated. So people, if they felt like they were starting to feel nauseous and going to vomit from dehydration, they would do something about it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, people just minimized their activity.
Thank you, Debbie. Would you like to say a final word on the food for today? What are you going to have?
Actually, I'm fasting. I'm doing this intermittent fasting because I'm trying to see if it makes me, what would I have? But when I do eat, I probably do a pretty much of a vegetarian diet because, yeah, like I said, I think it's fit for the environment and fit for me. And kashrut also asks us to think about the world in more than just about ourselves. Judaism basic premise is that you are responsible in the context of community. You're not responsible for yourself. It's not my relationship with God. First, it's my relationship with my fellow human being. And if that's on a good space, then I get to have a good relationship with God. But first thing I have to do is I have to be conscious of my environment first, my fellow human beings, my environment, everything. And then I can have a relationship with God.
And as you said, it's a choice. So we are fortunate enough to have a choice because in some countries you don't have a choice, but we have choice. And so you have the choice to eat and not to eat or to observe in moderation or to the extreme. So it's our choice.
Sorry about
thank
that.
Thank you very much, Debbie, and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Out there, oh, peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world.